And ready to go. And are we starting? Is it time?
You're good.
Thank you. I am.
We'll be better.
Yeah. So could you close the door, please? I like to keep the door closed. And hi, my name is Judy. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater.
Hi, Judy.
And I'm happy you're all here. What? Were you saying something wrong? My mic? No. Oh, okay. Anyway, I'm excited about today. I'm excited about you being here and my being here. A lot of what I want to deal with today is not stuff that I have, I've chewed on for a few years now, but I do not have it formalized, and I've never given a workshop on it before. I have notes. I have a lot I want to cover with you and a lot I want to draw from you. But it's a work in progress, as am I, as we all are. And I welcome a lot of your participation and argument and on some of what I believe I'd love to be proved wrong, you know. I'm open to it. I mean, I'm going to be sharing my experience. But it's all about how I framed it. So I would welcome new ideas around it. Still working on it, you understand? Okay, so, like that. So, partly some of what I want to do with us is why we're configured this way. When I came in last night to see the room, they had big round tables with everybody sitting at a nice table. Now, I don't know about you, but if they're going to sit me at a big round table for 12, I want to eat,
right?
You know? And that's what I'm going to be thinking about the entire day, you know? And plus, I didn't want you to be so spread out. I wanted us all facing each other, more or less, and for a lot of reasons. Now, last night, I was the person who asked the long-timers if they could speak to how they'd seen OA change. And I'm a long-timer myself. And one of the big changes that I've seen is this whole cell phone deal. Cell phones. So I have a big sign out there that says, "No cell phones, please." And I really, really mean it. Really. And I'll explain why. It's not about me trying to be a hard ass. However, Kelly needs to come in and out. She's working here, and she said she'll need to text in case somebody needs her in another room. So she is an exception. If you have emergency, you know, that you're waiting to hear from the hospital or something, let me know. But otherwise, no matter what, please turn them off and keep them in your purse or pocket or wherever you keep them. Because I learned early in OA, they said, love is the call from the other to come out. And that we were all little gerbils huddled together in the Palos Verdes library for a ladies' meeting. And we needed to focus with each other. I got the message so clearly without it being said that this is a very difficult, lifelong, chronic illness. And we need to all pull our energy together to help one another so that the rising tide raises all boats. And in those days, if someone was in the back of the room texting, it would be like, "What? What? We need you. We need your focus." You may not realize it. You may think that you spacing out on something else doesn't affect all of our recoveries. Not to guilt trip you, but it does. It does. If the energy in this room is distracted and not here, then you're not here. And you know we're all here because we're not all there. So that's my reason. I want us to try to focus. I have a lot of what I think are very interesting things for us to experience together. Okay? My plan is that I'm a morning person, so in this morning part, I'm going to talk a lot. Blah, 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 blah. But I will be open to questions as I'm going along. And then I have exercises, and the afternoon will be more interactive. After lunch, I'm going to kind of give you some direction on how to experience lunch based on what we do in the morning. Because all of it's important, in my opinion. Of course, opinions are like rectums. We all have one. And, you know, you take what you can use and leave the rest. So basically the plan is that I want to talk about how overeaters and alcoholics are similar, what makes it so that our 12-step programs work for us, and then I want to talk about how the recoveries are similar and different. And that based on I want to try to, by the end of the day, hopefully get most of us into a sort of flexitarian way of thinking about our recoveries. Now, I realize this is kind of controversial, and I'm kind of a little bit worried. There will be flack from people who say, it's written right here in black and white, dun, 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 you know? Yes. Okay, I want to welcome all of the discussion because maybe what I'm thinking is off the mark. I'm okay with that. I want to hear it, you know. So, and also, especially our exercises will be involved around listening to that still small voice within. That, to me, is the higher power, and that's why we need to be so focused with each other so that we can all listen. On the back of our coins, it says, to thine own self be true. So if you're doing this program just based on what someone else has told you, that's really good for the first 10 to 15 years. But I've been here 41 years. And if you start talking to long-timers who are still here, they talk a little more flexible. In fact, yesterday at the old-timer panel, somebody said that they ran into difficulty with food, and they discussed with their sponsor, do I start over? Am I now on day one? Some of these issues are what I want to talk about. This particular person said their sponsor said no, and then someone else told a great story about if you're driving from L.A. to New York and your car breaks down in Phoenix, you don't drive back to L.A. and start over. You get the car fixed. You fix the problem and proceed on to New York. And but see, these are all controversial issues because, oh, my God, what is she saying? Huh? Is somebody in here going to get away with something? Is somebody here going to get away with overeating? Whoever gets away with it? Whoever gets away with it? We pay the price. We personally pay the price. A lot of the other addictions, we damage other people. Ours, we do somewhat, too. But mostly, we're the one suffering. So when people call me and tell me, oh, this was up with food and I'm no damn good and I did all these things wrong, I say, there. You're hurting so much over what just happened. We are victims of an illness. We're not bad people trying to get good. We are sick people trying to get well. And every single bit of effort counts. And every one of you who's in this room today is doing it right now. It's all I care about. I don't care. I may never see you again. But right now, we are sharing our recovery together. And thank you for me. Thank you for being here. Thank each other. Yes. Okay? So, let's see. By preliminary stuff. So, just statistically, I've been in the program 41 years. I'm maintaining about an 80-pound weight loss. I'm quite aged. Good work. Today in my life, I'm more interested in function than form. I like looking good, but I'm really a lot more interested in my arthritic knees and my scoliosis and my spinal stenosis and doing what I need to keep this thing moving down the road. And it's nice, you know, a byproduct is she looks good too, but that's no longer my main agenda. I live in Palm Springs, by the way, a paid commercial announcement. We need speakers in Palm Springs. I'm going to give you my phone number if you're ever driving through Palm Springs, 760-322-0388. 760-322-0388. I have a little mobile home, extra guest house where you can stay. Some people here in this room have come out and spoken at our meetings for us, so please, that's what I'm asking, begging, inviting. I see that you might want to take notes. I'm grateful. I would love it if you'd email me your notes, because I never know what's the important thing you heard that, you know, sparked something for you, and that's helpful to me. So I'll give you my... What? I'll give you my email. Okay. However, I have to give you my last name because that's my email. So I'm sorry, but someone will be upset about that. Take it to your sponsor. Okay, my name. It's Judy, J-U-D-I, at J-U-D-I. HOLLIS.com. Judy Hollis at AOL.com. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Okay, so I will pass around my before pictures. I'm not going to talk all that much about my life before the program. I did everything the rest of you did, you know, nine times at Weight Watchers. Yes, sir. I might have said that because I have another email with that. But it's Judy at judyhollis.com. Anyway, some of these pictures were taken like 45 years ago in Asia. The one where I'm kneeling, I was in a market in Saigon. And actually... Yeah. And a woman came up to me in the market and she just kept pushing on my arm. You know, she kept pushing it in. And she called the other ladies over to watch how my fat went in because they'd never seen anyone like me. You know, they were just fascinated by how my body was. Mortifying. Mortifying. We have a line in our big book, we paid our dues, standing for painful and incomprehensible demoralization. We have the illness where we've made ourselves freaks in the culture. We're the ones where kids don't use the N-word in schoolyards anymore, but they say, you big fat this, and you big fat that, and you big fat that. That's still an acceptable F-word in our society. And we've lived that. Now later on, I hope I will remember to talk about the fact that we're really the miner's canaries in this society. What's a miner's canary? Well, when they're afraid there's extra gas that'll be dangerous to humans down in a mine, they send down a cage with a canary in it. And if the canary dies, they know we're not going to send any humans. Well, our illness, our plague of obesity, is an indication of a lot of things that are wrong in this society. And this is not a sociology lecture, but I want you to understand that we are products of our environment, and a lot of the factors that have brought us here are things we didn't ask for. And we're representative of some deep-seated problems. So we start addressing it, and what happens is we start living differently and walking differently and becoming different kinds of citizens in this society. And it can heal the world. I don't have grandiose expectations or anything, but seriously, I think the 12-step way of life is the greatest thing. I think we failed our promise in about the 90s when I think we had a chance to take over a lot of popular thought, but who knows, you know? Anyway, so I'll pass around the before pictures. Thank you. Any comment or question on what I've just said before I proceed? Anybody scared? Good. Oh, yes? Oh, okay. It's good, too. let me just kind of get a read of the room about length, you know, how long you've been around. Because the things I'm saying, some things would apply for newcomers, and the program changes as you're around for a while. That's part of the flexitarian recovery I want to talk about. So how many are in their first year? Okay. And your first 5 years. Okay. By the way, you know, 2 and 5 years are very important relapse things in addiction. We expect that in alcoholism and with overeating. And I had serious trouble in my second year. Drove me into therapy for the next 20 years. In fact, my therapist, the first time I saw him, he said, "You're going to be a long-term patient." And I said, "What?" I mean, I was already myself a therapist and very smart, so I didn't know how he saw that. But he was right. With OA as well, I was a serious case, and I still am, but getting better. So, what was I just saying? Oh, about how many years? Yeah. So I always thought, so why is it 2 years and 5 years? Why are those important things? And I think that we start approaching a time where it's a real question of, do you mean it? Do you mean you're really going to change your lifestyle, your life, and yourself? And I know that at 2 years, I wanted to run back under the gate. I could sense that there was a gate closing, that I could no longer go back to my old way of life, that you people had dragged me over to the other side of the line. And I didn't know if I could do it. And I didn't know if I even wanted to, you bunch of sissies. You know? And it was very traumatic. And I think, and you know, guess what? We also see 2 and 5 years in cancer recovery, don't we? If you have 2 years in remission, 5 years? Interesting. Just interesting. Can your organism change? The lady I am today cannot live in that body. And that lady can't live in this body. Do you understand? There's no going back. So if you have 1 or 2 years and you don't want it, it's okay, I understand. Unfortunately, we're pretty attractive. And we have a gleam in our eye. And we have a lot of fun in recovery. So you're probably going to be lured into sticking around. But I'm here to warn you. This is the warning label. You're going to change. We say in the program, you grow or you go. The big book says we can ill afford to idle in a retrogressive groove. Yeah! Actually, I had written that down to get the exact wording, and I can't open my tablet, so... I don't know exactly, but some big book thumper here might know exactly how it. You've never heard it?
Where is it?
Harlan, you never heard it? It says this. arrested recovery and blah, blah, blah.
Is it in the story?
I don't know. That I don't know. I'm going to have to take... What? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm going to take these off because they're going to bang on the... You already got the full effect. Stunning earrings, yes, okay. You know, as overeaters, we tend to get our nails done and wear nice shoes, hats, and earrings because we want to take the focus out of this area, you know, out to the periphery. So now that we got that going, we're done. Okay. Okay. So since I can't open the tablet, I'm going to be looking at some notes that are a little too small. So the title of this workshop is OA Your Way, Up to You, Down to Basics. I feel really blessed that I was asked to do this, and I want to do my best. There are other things happening this morning. If you want to leave and go do them, that's cool too. You can come and go as you please here. There's no requirements. But in the write-up, they said that this program was going to present conundrums. Now, I didn't write that. So then I said, I don't know. What's a conundrum? Oh, that probably... No, I don't need those because I have corrected lenses. It's just that I printed it out too small. What?
I Google it.
Thank you. He said he'd Google it, but he doesn't want, I don't want you looking at your cell phones. Well, that's what I was going to say. Yes, it's a difficult question, a quandary, or a dilemma. So that's what we're going to be exploring today. All right? One thing before I forget, I want to hopefully by the end of the day that you will move from swearing off to leaning in. Okay? We come here thinking we gotta swear off. What is your abstinence? What are you abstaining from? I am more interested in what you're going toward. Okay? Not what's not on my food plan, but what is. Much more interesting and important. Why are we so focused on cutting out instead of incorporating and having it all? Hey, come on, my middle name is Moore. We come here because we like to have it all. So I'm going to encourage you to have it all. And you will lean into recovery in a healthy way. Now, there's another important thing, a guideline here. Stop playing dumb. I'm very serious. Okay? The first 30 years of my life, 29 and a half actually, I played the 222-pound fat lady who went to all the doctors. Some of them gave me pills, some of them gave me shots, some of them gave me a long finger, shaking at me what to do better. And I said, "Thank you, doctor." Then they'd send me out to the other room where the girls would weigh me in because that's trashy work for the doctor. So the girls would weigh me in, and the next week I'd come back and I'd weigh in again and again. And it was all, and oh, by the way, young lady, here's a 1,200 calorie diet. Oh, thank you, doctor. I've never seen such a thing. Stop it. Stop it all. Stop it. Oh, they say that carbs are bad. They say. What I'm talking about today is finding what works for you. And when it needs modification, making modifications and staying on the path. Okay? So you know stuff. Yes, when we first come in here, they say, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth and you're too dumb to speak and blah, 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 blah. That's all very good. Yes, for newcomers, I think it's great. It worked for me. It was very good. But at some point, You got to stop playing dumb. You got to stop saying, well, my sponsor said, my sponsor said, my sponsor said, I'm divorcing you because my sponsor told me to. You know, we go and we find the guidance that we want to reinforce what we wanted to do in the first place. We are responsible. This is our life. Our life is in session. You must be present to win. So, stop playing dumb. Now, I know this is a spiritual program, and I am a quite spiritual person, never intended to be. Gotten involved in all kinds of stuff. Buddhist monasteries, India, Malaysia, Burma. Fabulous. Never intended any of that for me. But I do not believe in God. And I just want to say that because when people say it's a God-given abstinence and God did for me, yes, yes, yes. But I'm not trying to mess with anybody's religion here. But there's an AA story about a guy is driving along in the Midwest and he sees these great fields of all kinds of great produce and stuff, and he sees the farmer up the road. So he stops and he gets out and he says to the farmer, it is fabulous how God has graced you with these wonderful fields of corn and hay and tomatoes and everything you've got. The farmer says, yeah, I worked my ass off. And he says, yeah, but you've been blessed with this great soil and the rain and all that God delivered here, the sun, the great weather and stuff. He says, yeah, but I worked really hard and so did my family and we had a lot of hard times. And the guy says, yes, but this is all a gift of God. And he said, oh, yeah? You should have seen it when God had it by himself. So in my recovery, this is a cooperative relationship between me and the universe. It's like a pledge break on PBS with a matching donor. That they tell me, you invest $5 and we've got a donor who'll give you back $10. But you have to put up your $5 first. So really what I want to focus on today is you putting up the $5. And let the universe take care of the rest. Okay? So I'm not going to be focused a lot on what God does here today. I want to focus on what we each do for our own individual recovery. All right? Even though the universe has an effect, and the culture has an effect, and everything has an effect, let's just see what I have to take care of. The serenity prayer. What can I change? Okay, you still in? Any comments, questions? All right.
I want to know what happens after 5 years.
Oh, it just gets blissful. For the next 35, you got nothing to worry about. But you know why I say that? Because people always used to say when I would talk about, you know, for the first 2 years, I was on gray sheet. But a modified gray sheet, so I want to tell you about that because it relates to my theme here. But people would say, how long do I have to eat like this? And I always said, 2 years. 2 years. Because why? Because at least you get the person thinking kind of long term, you know. Oh, at least 2 years, and on that 2 year and one day, I'm grabbing everything, you know. But at least it gets you thinking further out there. Honey, I have a lifelong chronic illness. After 41 years, I still go to OA meetings. I just stopped on the way into LA to visit with a friend. He says, oh, you're still doing that? You know, he sees the results. He sees everything that I am today. He's known me for a long time. But he doesn't understand why I still go to those meetings. See? I'm still doing basically what I did in the beginning with modification. So, And I still have a home group. I still do whatever they ask me to do, usually, you know, in terms of service. And like that. So I'll talk about this later today. Let me just make a note. I have this off schedule here. Well, why don't I go in? What I want to talk about now, and I want your help on this because you can add some more. What I've done is on both of the lists that I'm going to be dealing with today, I've conveniently made lists of 12. Get it? Okay. So, but if us together we come in with a list of 95, I'll be more than grateful. Because we can always make them less. But similarities between alcoholics and overeaters. And then later we'll discuss the differences. Now, I was there when OA had its 21st birthday. And I, at that time, said, hey, guys, we're 21 years old. That's considered an adult. It is time for us to gather all the great knowledge we got from Daddy. Daddy had so much to input into us. And now, as what happens in the process of maturation and growth, is we then take our own experience and decide on our own program. To a large extent, OA has done that in many ways. It started publishing its own, you know, literature and that sort of thing, and still very respectful of the AA program. But in many ways, it's been hindered by the legacy. And we'll get into more of that later on today. But let's first look at the similarities between overeaters and alcoholics. And the big one we're always dealing with is the big D.
Denial.
Yes. Denial is not just a river in Egypt. But, you know, obviously, someone very close to me always says, I just don't understand the whole thing that you guys are always talking about. He said, it seems to me that when you gain 5 pounds, you know it, you see it, and you do something about it. How can people tell you that they regained 100 pounds before they got back to OA? They just don't understand. They don't understand that when we're in the throes of our obsession, that we really think, I always thought, there's no relationship between what I'm doing right now and what's going on in my body. They are two separate experiences. And a lot of that was because of my life of eternal dieting, that I'd always been able to put it on, take it off, put it on, take it off. I used to gain, in one weekend, I could gain 20 pounds. Had a few buffets and a couple parties, and I'm there. So then get rid of it. So I never saw what I was doing with food related. When I hit 200, I thought the scale was broken. And then at 215, I thought the dryer was shrinking my clothes. Seriously, I wasn't making it up. That's really my evaluation. But there's a bigger part of denial. It's not just denying what we're doing to ourselves. Denying that this bite counts, every bite counts. That's why some of my most important moments in recovery have been stopping mid-bag. Instead of that idea, I will finish this. No. We're going to stop. We're going to call our sponsor. We're going to deal with what's going on here. But the most important, biggest, outrageous part of denial is okay, thanks, I'll take care of it. I can do it myself. And we live in a culture that says, just buy this magazine or buy this self-help book or go to this gym, sign up now, we got a discount. And the culture keeps telling you that you're a red-blooded American. We'll even set up some competition like the Biggest Loser. And once you have competition, then that'll do it. See, our whole society tells us to come at it fighting, not leaning in, not gentling down, not there. I tried my best. I dieted my way to 222 pounds. I didn't get there by willy-nilly running amok, whatever I want. I worked at it all the time. I never wanted to be fat, never. And it just got me fatter. You know, even when we do interventions in alcoholism, you know, you hear all this stuff and they got a TV show now about it. You know, there's kind of this drama that they'll do intervention and the person walks off into the sunlight to go to treatment. That is the rare case. The majority of outcomes of intervention, the good outcomes, are when the alcoholic says, okay, guys, I see your point. I'll take care of it. But we're wise to that one, so what do? Back in the corner, we got this thing. We say, okay, then, how about we sign this contract that you will do it on your own for 30 days, and if it doesn't work out, then you'll go to treatment. Oh, of course, because I'm full of ego and I know I'll sign that. And then 30 days later, we say, you ready yet? You know, that's a good outcome, is when the person says, thank you, I'll take care of it. And that's what you've been doing, I've been doing all my life around OA. I mean, before OA, is I'm taking care of this thing. Thank you very much. I know how to handle it. I'm smart. Right? Smarts have nothing to do with it. I was an expert in alcoholism and getting fatter and fatter and completely understanding the dynamics. So what am I doing here? I'm saying you got to keep coming to OA. I'm sorry, because you can't do it alone. And you're going to hear at a meeting, maybe the most boring meeting you ever went to, you'll hear somebody saying something you needed to hear that minute. You didn't know that that was even on your chart. You're not so smart. Excuse me, my notes are just too small here. So what is that really saying? What is really being engendered with that is humility. So if you come at this disease, I don't care how long you've been here, I have a lot less to say to people than I used to. Some of you knew me 30 years ago. There's people in this room I've known a long time. And they heard how smart I was and I gave big lectures and stuff. I'm not that smart anymore. I'm not sure. I want everybody to find whatever works. I can't tell you how to do this thing. It is monumental. So a second way that we are like alcoholics is we have mood swings with our substance. And that's basically why we like it, for the most part. So, like in a meditation thing this morning, I was suggesting to people that they try to create that meditative mood when they approach their meal today at lunch. That we want to constantly be aware of what our mood is around food and what we're mood alterations we're seeking with the substance. Now, I had treatment programs years ago, And we would make people, we would insist that they have to eat a certain way, that they had to sit down and to hold this mindful eating thing. And when people left treatment, the thing they hated most about treatment when they signed their evaluation forms was, what I hate most is the divine dine. This thing where we would ask them to eat in this meditative manner without all the other stuff around food, without the TV, without the reading, and without the talking. No talking, also. Here were people who'd come from so many distant locations, lock me up because I can't stop eating. Then we'd ask them for 20 minutes a day to sit alone mindfully with the substance. They couldn't stand it. So it's interesting to start looking at renegotiating your relationship with this substance. Later on, when I'm talking about the differences with OA and AA, we have to form a new relationship with our substance. We can't swear off. And that's very major in how we do that, and it keeps changing over time. So another way that we're similar is we're constantly chasing the first bite. Now, I first learned about this when I worked with heroin addicts in New York City in 1968. That's how old I am. And they would always talk about that first hit of heroin. There was nothing better than that first time. And they're always trying to get back to that first time. Well, a lot of us do that, too. It's called euphoric recall, how we keep remembering, oh, that Thanksgiving. How many of you sit at a great meal and talk about the restaurant you were at last night? You find yourself doing that? Don't do that. Don't do that. Be here now with this meal. Love it, savor it, suck it dry. But don't piss on it by talking about last night's meal. Okay? These are really important things. So this is the reality that we have to... Wait, what was I going to say? I'm sorry. Now, in recovery, we have to pay a lot of attention to that first bite. I'm talking about the first bite, this meal, this lunch. All right? I never, ever, ever think about the first bite. I always think about the second. The first one is just to get started. I never savor it. I never enjoy it. I have to force myself to pay attention. Is this really what I wanted to eat? Am I eating it in the way I want to be eating it? When I always rush to the second bite, then it was always rushing to the whole bag to, you know? So I'm saying even though we're chasing the excitement of the first bite, the surprise of it, that in recovery we have to make this first bite and this first bite and this first bite. Focus, intention. Now what happens, I'm going to show later about tolerance change and how later on in recovery and before recovery we need more and more to achieve the same results. It seems kind of depressing, this whole story, doesn't it? Yeah. I want you to know how depressing it is. We're serious here. This is not fun and games. We have fun, but deadly illness. You know, I had a friend, Ann W., who was a big AA speaker. She went all over the country giving big seminars for AA, and she was found dead in her showers with her house strewn with jelly beans. She was a diabetic. She died of her overeating, not her alcoholism. And there are many stories like that. So, you know, in the 60s, we used to say, you know, we're really smart aleck and into drugs, and we'd say, reality's for people who can't handle drugs. Right? So now what I want to tell you is in recovery in 2015, reality is for people who can't handle drugs. We have to live in reality. We have to live with deadly seriousness about this thing. So when all those other wonderful dieters are out there telling you about the new thing they're trying and how great they're doing, mum's the word. We have to live in reality. We already tried that last week. We already know about that. Oh, you ate a lot at Thanksgiving? Amateur night. We know how to eat. Okay? So what am I suggesting here is that we all walk to the tune of a different saxophone. We become different people. It doesn't mean you're not going to have fun and not be in the world. I'm very much in the world. But I'm not part of that whole addictive mindset that's out there. So as I mentioned earlier, the other thing, the mood swing thing, is the euphoric recall. That's another thing that we resemble alcoholics. We forget the bad times and only remember what we wanted to get out of it. And we're using it as a treatment. See, food isn't our problem. Food was our solution to the problem. So that's why if you go to meetings that are constantly focusing on food and food plans, go to Weight Watchers. That's what they do in Weight Watchers. We know how to eat. Most of you do, I'm pretty sure. I always thought it was funny when a nutritionist in the hospital wanted to explain to an overeater about calorie counts. I said, are you kidding? These patients know more about calorie counts than you'll ever know. Ask me about popcorn. Popcorn, 50 calories for what, a cup? 100 calories. I forget. Anyway, I used to know. See, I don't do it anymore, but I used to know. Also, interesting enough, we have blackouts. And a lot of you might be saying, oh, I don't know why I said that or why I behaved that way or whatever happened that other night. It's because of how you're eating. Now, a blackout is different than a hangover. If an alcoholic's in a blackout, they are super functional. They are absolutely present to the task. But they themselves are not there. They're on automatic pilot. They are terrific. And that's who I was. I was a super achiever before recovery. My first year, I lost my job. Things went south when I got into recovery. So this blackout, in a hangover, a person is impaired. They're groggy. They're headachy. Blah, blah. So if you're on an airplane, would you rather your pilot be in a blackout or a hangover? Huh? Neither. True, neither. But you'd really, if you had to choose, you'd choose a blackout because he's going to land that plane. But he will have no memory of it whatsoever. He will not know it happened. And we have those same kind of things happen for us with food. Still today, I meet up with all kinds of old friends who tell me, remember when... No. No. Don't you remember you... No. I don't. Was not there. So most of us come into recovery as pretty accomplished super achievers. Most of us are not Skid Row bums when we get in here. We might be in our bodies, but we're not in our lifestyles. And this is a detriment, really. Because if we really dragged ourselves in here, we'd be more motivated than this kind of just half-assed commitment to, I think I'll try a little dieting. So, of course, both of us have lost our self-esteem over our eating. So even though we were super achievers, we never felt good about ourselves. We call it the imposter syndrome. Never felt I really achieved or accomplished anything, that I had everybody fooled. low self-esteem around all of these failed attempts at trying to control this behavior. Now, you know, the AA Big Book, Chapter 3 is, these are the methods we have tried. We switched from beer to alcohol, we taking a trip, not taking a trip, not drinking before 5, right? All these things. If overeaters wrote a Chapter 3, you couldn't lift it. You understand? I mean, we have tried so many ways. Most alcoholics who come into recovery have not tried as many ways as we have. So this leads to more loss of self-esteem. I tried my best. If you have an ego investment, whoa, my boobs are moving. Okay. If you have an ego investment in looking good in recovery, then you will lose self-esteem. So that's why all this complimenting people, how great you look. Yes, fine, but, you know, it's not about what I did to achieve this. It's about sitting in these rooms and letting it happen to us by osmosis. Just trying to huddle together and let it happen for us. That's what we're doing here. You know, you're not going to see TV ads that say, by the way, you alcoholics, we've got a great and easy 15-day way for you to get over your alcoholism. But we do see these things constantly for overeaters. So these ads also help us have great loss of self-esteem. We paid our dues, as I mentioned earlier. We all have suffered the painful and incomprehensible demoralization. I think for the most part I can say that for this group, because otherwise you wouldn't be here, would you? You'd be at some other diet club. So to choose to spend my weekend getting serious about this thing means that I've already tried a few times. We also, of course, come from dysfunctional families, and I'm not going to get into that. There's been plenty written about all of that. But the truth is that nobody really knows how to do the family thing. Nobody knows how to raise kids. Nobody gets a course on it. I don't get one bit of training in school. You have to know more to get a fishing license than to raise a kid. So everybody's doing the best they can, as well as the damaged people who damaged me. And I never had kids. And I know part of it is I did not want to continue the damaging. I didn't feel secure that I could do it any better. We also both tend to have rituals around the use of our substance, at least until the final days. But, you know, as overeaters, we have that. You know, I'll have my coffee first. I'll have my salad on the side. I'll have my dressing on the side. You know, all these rituals around worshiping this love object. So in recovery, one of the things we need to do is mix things up. That's why I ask about you, please put cell phones away. I ask about you, you know, being open to surprise and not letting yourself just go on automatic. Okay? That even if it means trying some new foods with the aid of your sponsor, what about looking into trying something new? So I want to take a 10-minute break here. Just in 1 second. We'll take a break, and we'll come back to looking at the process of addiction, how addiction develops. Yes?
So I was jumping out of my seat. I was counting them. And what about the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind? Is that a similarity?
That's what I'm going to talk about when we come back. Okay. But I will also ask you guys to think about it and help add to this list before I end the list. Okay?
Thank you.
10 minutes. Thank you.
So last few days, it was an inappropriate attachment. I was having an intimate relationship with an inanimate object.
Wait. I'm sorry. But I'd rather get that on the tape because it's good. Not that I should evaluate, but go ahead.
Yeah, when I... Hello?
Go again.
Hello?
No. Oh, shoot.
Is there a little up and down notch thing on there? On the, like an off-on switch?
Hello?
I don't see.
Look at me looking like I know what to do.
It's tape over it, so maybe it's just...
Maybe it's on. Hello? It's just for the tape, maybe. Okay. Well, go ahead. Speak up.
Okay. After I'd been in recovery from alcoholism for a while, it was pointed out that I was having an intimate relationship with an inanimate object, alcohol, an inappropriate attachment, and I had always had trouble connecting with human beings. So recovery has been about appropriate attachment, being able to connect with other people and community. And then when I, after being sober, I replaced sugar, you know, for the alcohol, and that became, you know, that's what led me to come here, was just being unable to put down sugar and other food fixes, as I call them, and going to those the substance of the food, the sugar,
right,
for the fix, you know.
I think that's such a very good point, that we're people who lack connection. Now, we may live in a whole culture where most people are lacking connection, and because everyone's looking at their phone now, it's even more so. So I was always attracted to people who would offer no connection, because that was safe. It was just enough. And I didn't have a clue, like you're saying. And people who would come like full frontal right up to me were very scary, you know. So that is a way that we are similar. And so some of what we're going to deal with today is how to develop your own sense of more connectedness. Those who were in the meditation workshop this morning, we did a little of that, of just kind of feeling this boundary. We don't have enough to, you know, cover that all. We need a weekend. We need a lot more time, but that's an important similarity between alcoholics and overeaters. And that's why we hook up together. You know, my first husband was an alcoholic. He was a morning drinker. Not, you know, I wasn't that bad. And, you know, it was a mutual suicide pact. I won't say anything about your drinking. You don't say anything about my eating. Right? So who had their hand up? Yes. Low tolerance for discomfort. Very good. So along with that low tolerance that we're going to get to here in a minute is a low frustration tolerance and a demand for immediate pleasure versus deferred gratification. This is one of the biggest things we have to learn in recovery is not today, just not today. You know, I'll have it tomorrow. I'll defer it for one day, but not today. Have no training in that. Very, very basic, hard stuff. Yes?